You're listening to the Pinto and White Shadow Show on KFGO.com and 740thefan.com.
Hello, everybody, and yes, Daniel Pinto Gunderson is back. So is the White Shadow, Brad Jones, for the 018 podcast on 740thefan.com, KFGO.com. I'm Daniel Pinto Gunderson. You can find me on Twitter at PintoKFGO. My co-host, Brad, the White Shadow Jones, you can find him on Twitter
at the Bison Guy.
Make sure to follow us on Facebook. We'll take your comments, questions, whatever you have regarding the podcast. Also, at Gmail, pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com is our email address. You can send us one there or comment on the podcast page on KFGO.com. We usually have several entries when it comes to comments from the podcast, and we address them usually at the end of the show, sometimes at the beginning of the show, depends on what they're about. So make sure and hit us up there. The reason, though, that we had a break last week from the podcast, the first break we had in about 4 months, I want to say. We've been going strong with this, and thank you so much. I was in Dallas.
You were.
Watching the Cowboy-Viking game. My girlfriend's brothers, Ryan and Lance Thompson, and a group of guys do this every year. They go to an away game that the Vikings are playing at. They went to Kansas City 1 year and St. Louis last year. This year is Dallas. Next year is probably New Orleans.
Ooh.
Oh, I know.
Oh, yeah.
And they're thinking about getting an RV for this. Now, this was a straight guys weekend. There was seven guys staying in one hotel. A lot of guys just falling asleep on the floor. It was your typical guy weekend, if you can think about
it. What happens in the hotel stays in the hotel.
Pretty much. What happened in Dallas stays in Dallas.
Okay, yeah.
So it was a good time. Fun was had by all. And that place is like the Mecca.
So how big is it?
It's big.
Okay.
It is massive. I wrote an article, The Ultimate Fans Trip, I think is what the title is, on KFGO.com. Check out my blog, Pinto's Points, and took several pictures of inside Dallas Stadium. It's AT&T Dallas Stadium or something stupid like that, AT&T Stadium, because AT&T paid a ridiculous amount of money to put their logo everywhere. But I call it Dallas Stadium. Cowboy Stadium, actually, is what I call it. I should call it. We got to go on Saturday. We went to the stadium, toured it, walked on the field, went to the locker rooms. I pretty much was just going nuts.
Yeah.
Because I'm a Cowboy fan.
You are.
And so to be able to walk onto the star and walk into the end zone.
Now, did you TO and spike the ball right on the...
Now, the group of guys I'm with are all Viking fans.
Yep.
And so my girlfriend's brother, Ryan, looks at me and goes, so you're going to do the TO on the star? And little did he know, I had already done it. They were having like this group that lined up, and they would take pictures on the star. And so while they were taking pictures, I went up to the star, and I did the TO. I raised my hands up right in the middle of the star. I figured, hey, why not? You know, I'm here.
And then did Darren Woodson come and just deck you from out of nowhere?
Yeah, no, actually.
Okay.
No. Was it Woodson or was it Brock Marion?
You probably know better than I
would. I think
it
was Brock Marion who actually did it. Darren Woodson probably has too much class.
Yeah.
Well, actually, he probably would be a guy who'd do that, too. But, yeah, it was a lot of fun. We went to a TCU West Virginia game. Sundresses and cowboy boots. North Dakota State University, get on it. That's all I'm going to say. We'll put it there. Just get on it. But it was a lot of fun. It's a trip.
Now, don't say something that's going to cause you to no longer have your girlfriend's brother next year. You just be careful.
I know. I have to be on my best behavior for a whole year because they're planning on getting an RV and going from Minnesota, like cities area, all the way down to New Orleans in an RV. Oh, boy. That would be epic. That would be epic. So that was a lot of fun. But I'm back. It was a great trip, especially since the Cowboys won. That was a lot of fun. And they've pretty much made Vikings talk on this podcast irrelevant at this point. So we won't have to bring them up, most likely.
Except we still will.
We'll have to talk about their NFL. Yeah, I do actually have one question on here. So, but let's get it started because
we got a lot.
We got a lot to get to. So let's just get it underway and start with
local.
Okay, so North Dakota State University football team winners yesterday, 28-10 over Illinois State. They moved to overall 9-0 on the season, 6-0 in the Missouri Valley Football Conference. But that is the furthest from everybody's mind right now. A couple injuries happened during that game. The first one was to Marcus Williams. According to Craig Bull in the post-game press conference, said Marcus twisted his knee. And that wasn't the biggest concern because there was a lot of unknown about that one. Chances that Marcus will be back, we don't know yet because we haven't heard anything.
Seemed precautionary
with
him.
But they seemed that it was going to be okay.
Yeah.
But the biggest injury out of this game was Grant Dulcin, presumably lost for the season. Major knee damage. Again, I haven't seen anything that has come out today. I know he was going to get tested today to see how bad the knee was. I haven't seen anything come out, but the initial thought is cruciate ligament. And whenever you hear that, you know, as for a football player, that's just, it's season ending. You need that to move laterally. So Grant Dulcin essentially done for the year, barring a miracle that they screwed up on the sidelines and said, yeah, you blew your knee out. And then they go to the MRI.
Just
and they're like,
kidding.
Yeah. Hey, guess what? It's just a sprained knee. You'll be back in a couple weeks. Grant Dulcin's done for the year. The question that I have for you, Brad, I don't want to say how big is this because it's big. Yeah. I mean, there is no downplaying that, but is it catastrophic? Because that's a heavy turn to put on it.
Here's the thing. I mean, by catastrophic, and you got to qualify all of it, what does it mean? You got to get more specific. Is it catastrophic?
Okay, I'll go into the next question. We'll just
couple
them together.
I think that's the question.
Do you think NEC will still make the national championship after this injury?
Yes, but I'm going to hesitate a little. They can't have anything else with their linebacking core, and I don't know what I don't know if they need to get some super glue into Travis Beck's shoulder to make sure that thing keeps quits popping out of place. But I think they still can, even though. And I think this was, and it's interesting because this was a question I believe that we had in one of our first podcasts, is what player can the Bison least afford to lose injury?
And it was something I wrote about earlier, too.
And I think we both ended up settling on Grant Dulcin.
Being the top player.
It was the number one, that they could even handle the loss of Brock Jensen probably better than what they could handle the loss of Grant Dulcin.
And that was at the beginning of the season. So let's revisit that question. Do you still stand by that?
Yes.
That Grant Dulcin is top?
Yes.
Okay.
But this team might still be good enough to be able to overcome it.
I'm going to go back to that question.
Okay.
Because I say no, that he's been replaced, in fact, by probably a couple people in my mind. I think Billy Turner has put himself so high on that level with the offensive line and how important he is as a stability factor because they've had a lot of issues at the guard, center, injury-wise. That I think Billy Turner has put himself up there.
Okay.
The emergence of Ezley Thornton and Carlton Littlejohn.
Okay.
I think those two have played into the fact that they've added some depth so they can survive this. And Brock Jensen has just been... Brock Jensen and his deep throw threat with Zach Vrah has expanded this offense to the point where I don't know if Carson Wentz would be able to come in and duplicate what Jensen has done so far this year. I will reiterate again into this microphone. Dead wrong. This guy right here. Brock Jensen being overrated.
Where's your sounder here? Come on, I need to hear that.
All right.
Come
for
on.
You?
Just
wrong,
for me.
Wrong, thank you. Wrong, 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 wrong.
He has far surpassed, his career year was his sophomore year, and he's far surpassed that this year. And it's been in no small part to Zach Vrah. He's been a huge help, but just his overall composure and command, and we saw it with you and we saw it with Kansas State, and I think we're going to see it now because the emotional leader was Grant Dulcin for the defense, for the team. He was kind of that stability guy. He was the guy that everybody leaned on. Brock Jensen, second in command. Now he has to step up on the field for the whole team overall in general with the attitude going forward. Because I think that's the biggest change here is that what is your attitude going to be going forward? Is it going to be one of, okay, we just lost Grant Dulcin. How are we going to play out the rest of the season? Or is it going to be, okay, one guy down, next guy fills in, let's go on. Not to downplay the injury at all, but...
Yeah, and Littlejohn, he if nothing else, man, he's got the speed to play middle. I mean,
yeah,
he can
does.
Get from he's. I mean, that boy, I think, could cover some wide receivers. He's got some major, major speed. And Ezley Thornton can play. Ezley Thornton can play the outside linebacker. I mean, they can use Colton Hegel as a de facto extra linebacker because of the as physical as he plays. I mean, I think those guys can step in and. And be able to fill that role, but they can't afford another one. They
no.
can't afford anybody else to go out in that linebacking core. I still think Grant's the one guy, and you always hear, you know, Grant's the smartest player that Coach Bull has ever coached. And it makes sense because he was in the right gap every single play. Now, I think Littlejohn's going to hit the gaps hard, but it's just a matter of is he going to hit the right ones and hit them at the right time. And that's the question. I think he can do it. I think this defense is just good enough all around to be able to weather the storm. But I still think I still maintain that he was the one guy that it would hurt the most losing him.
Now with this team moving forward, we have to kind of relax everybody, because I think the mood yesterday was season's over.
Weird press conference.
It was
yesterday.
A weird game in general because of hunting opener, the deer hunting opener. The stadium itself didn't have that energy.
Yep.
And it was just kind of a, ho-hum game, especially because NDSU came out firing right away. They were up 21-7. People were going, game's over. That was the sense. I had an argument. I was up in the press row. Mike McFeely is standing by me, and I said, yeah, the mood changed when Jolson got hurt. He said, no, it didn't. It was always this way. He said, there was a lack of energy, yes, but it got somber after he got hurt.
I agree with you.
You could sense a change.
Yep.
You could sense a change.
When he came back out on the field and when people could see him getting hugs from almost everybody, from Gene Taylor, from Brock Jensen, things changed a little bit. And part of it, too, right now is frankly, in addition to it being hunting opener and in addition to Illinois State not exactly being an opponent that is really going to conjure up a lot of emotion, I think at this point Bison fans are just, all right. When are the playoffs? Just wake me up when the playoffs get here.
Right. Which is kind of, I don't know how you put that, because, and maybe that's a fear of FBS schools, is that we're going to lose fans once we get to like 8 wins if there was a playoff system, because they're going to go, okay, next biggest game is the playoffs, instead of every game being a kind of a title run, if you will. And you sense that with NDSU, though. I mean, you do, because this school is in the midst of its greatest run in school history, and those fans should be packing that stadium with the same amount of energy game in, game out, regardless of who the team is.
And this, if I can put on my cynic's hat for just a second, this is why all the people who are saying, oh, it's time to go FBS right now, it's time to go FBS, settle down. We're even in the midst of a back-to-back national champions and a team that should and is the number one team, the unanimous number one team in the country, and should be in the mix for another national title. There were still a lot of empty seats in the dome. So let's settle down a little bit here.
Yeah. NDSU fans have become, all right, playoff time, like you said.
Yep.
And it's a big game coming up this weekend, too, for them against Youngstown State. And without Grant Olson on this team, and again, the team's going to be fine because they're going to play their base 4-3. The reason this team is going to be fine in my mind, and I guess I didn't really answer the question that I put out there. I think resoundingly, yes, they make the national championship, because the strength of this team, while Grant Olson is the smartest and the guy makes all the calls, the strength of this team is in the defensive line. You think of Levon Perry, Brian Schatz, Danny Lukey, the defensive line, Kyle Emanuel, Cole Jurek. This defensive line is so unbelievably talented and deep that it makes the linebacker's job that much easier. I think that gives Carlton Littlejohn a little bit more security.
It gives them the opportunities, and it's a matter of if they will tackle, because how many times have you heard the words over the last couple of years, and he gets away from Grant Olson?
Yes, but here's the other thing. Have you heard it many times, and he gets away from Beck, and he gets away from Littlejohn?
You don't, but Olsen's the guy who's making most of those tackles.
Olson is by far the best defensive player that they have. There's no doubt about it. He's going to be sorely missed. But I still have so much confidence in this defense, along with the fact Colton Hegel's still around.
Yeah.
Now, if you lose Grant Olson last year, then I don't know if you can continue, because you've lost your best interior lineman, your best secondary player as far as tackling is concerned. Marcus Williams probably in that mix as well. Best secondary player, I'm saying. Not tackling. We're not going to discuss his tackling. It's awful. But and then you lose Grant Olson. So they needed Grant Olson last year. I think this year they survive. So we'll move on from that. Looking at... here's a question. Has NDSU clinched home field advantage, or do they need another win?
They need one more.
Okay, cool. That's exactly what I thought. And they have Youngstown.
I don't think it matters which one. I think they could lose to Youngstown and beat USD and get it, but I think they need one more.
Okay. USD and Montana played this week. That was a big game for the Missouri Valley. We saw Missouri State beat SIU, SDSU beat Indiana State 29-0, and you and I over Youngstown State in a very late field goal for you and I. Before we get to the Youngstown State game, we'll recap a little bit of the Missouri Valley. The question I have is, I think at this point there are two teams for sure that are going to make the playoffs out of the Valley. Would you agree, Youngstown State and NDSU, or is Youngstown State no longer a lock for you?
I think they're still a lock.
Okay. Missouri State and SDSU are probably the next two in there, and I'm looking at the standings right now, and it has Missouri State as the third team in the standings, 5-2 overall, or 5-2 in the Valley, 5-6 overall. The next would be Illinois State, and then South Dakota State follows them. Who, Brad, out of these two teams, Missouri State, South Dakota State, has the best shot of making the playoffs?
I still think SDSU.
Why?
I mean, it's going to be six losses is a lot of losses to be able, you know, to have that overall record. I that's going to be real, real tough to overcome, especially when they don't, you know, they don't have a chance to, because I know they've already played NDSU and I believe they've already played Youngstown. It's going to be really, really tough for them to pick up a signature win enough to change somebody's mind at this point.
Even with a 6-2 record, plus the fact they beat South Dakota State already this year? 6-2 record in the Valley, I want to say. Clarify.
If you have 6 wins, it's not going to get it done. If you have 7 wins, it may be you're on the border.
They started out the season so tough when they had an opportunity against Murray State and Central Arkansas to really kind of make a statement early on. Unable to do it. I have to agree with you, but at this point, should we revisit the question you brought up last week?
So two weeks ago, I presented you with a potential wager of to add to our ongoing wagers of how many over under 2.5 Missouri Valley Football Conference teams making the playoffs.
Yep.
I was willing to take the over on 2.5. You had the under, but you chickened out.
I did chicken out.
At this point, if we revisited that, I will no longer, I would still say 3, but I do not feel good about it. And I would not put that, I would not put a wager on that.
Yeah, because right now it's tough to say who would be that third team. Missouri State, Illinois State, South Dakota State, Southern Illinois, South Dakota all have 3 or more conference wins, but you look at their overall records, the best out of that group is SDSU, and they need to win out in order to get in at 8-4, just to make it, you know, make themselves somewhat relevant.
I think if SDSU's 8-4, I think they'll get in.
Games against South Dakota next week and Youngstown after that. So
if you win those two games, I think they're in.
Okay.
Especially since they won a playoff game last year.
All right. Let's move on to the Youngstown State NDSU game. Let's discuss it. How do you think it's going to go?
Man, Youngstown's always tough, and this is one of our other ongoing wagers that we made at the beginning of the year.
And you're still in it.
If NDSU loses, who's it going to be to? The two teams that I had were South Dakota State and Youngstown.
And right now, with the way Youngstown's playing, and they did lose on a last-second field goal to Iowa.
I mean, Northern Iowa. You just didn't think that the number 4 team in the country at one point was going to end up putting up a biscuit in the conference.
Right.
And man, what a game to get their win. Now, this was a discussion I was having with my brother-in-law earlier today, and we didn't come to an agreement on this. Maybe you can help us out, or do you know if both the Bison and Youngstown were to finish with the same conference record,
right,
with NDSU, now does NDSU end up getting it, or do they split it?
No, it's how does it go? I don't think it's split. I think it's Youngstown State wins it because they have the tiebreaker.
But NDSU would have to beat Youngstown for it to be even.
No, NDSU has to win for it to just be. It's there.
Or excuse me, yeah, Youngstown. Okay, yeah. So Youngstown would get it. Okay.
Yep. Okay. I think that is how it goes because I know NDSU's been in a similar situation.
Okay.
When, who did they lose? I think they lost to Youngstown State 2 years ago. It was a split kind of thing. There are two teams at 7-1. I have to check it out, but
it went by head-to-head.
Yeah, and okay. NDSU ended up taking it. So it would be Youngstown State's or NDSU's. Okay. No, Youngstown State's crown.
Youngstown State's crown if they win.
Yes, so, exactly.
And assuming they don't lose their last week of the season against SDSU.
The producer of Game Day evidently said that this game, if Youngstown State doesn't lose, was in the running for a Game Day appearance.
My initial appearance was, yeah, okay, way to make everybody feel good. And then I looked at next week's slate of games, pretty terrible throughout FBS football. Not good. No top 25, two top 25 teams facing off against each other. So, I mean, yeah.
NDSU is a program that has become nationally kind of everybody's darling. I mean, you have New York Times writing articles about NDSU. You've got Dennis Dobbs
saying that Carson Wentz is going to be leading us to the playoffs.
Yeah, that wasn't his fault, though. That wasn't the article. The guy who wrote the article wasn't his fault. It was whoever put the pictures together, which, of course, maybe he had a hand in it. You also have the fact that Dennis Dobbs, a national college football writer from CBSSports.com, is essentially, you know, I'm pretty sure he's on the bandwagon for NDSU. Yeah. We've made some room for him. He writes about him. I think he's wrote like
national,
three articles about
national
him.
National darling is strong, but there's some people that are some people at major outlets that
national
are
media
notice.
Darling. How's that sound?
Well,
ESPN is ESPN comes here, you've got Fox Sports 1 making room for you. I think NDSU would be considered that way.
Yeah, if you're a darling, they care about you on a week to week basis. I don't think we're quite there yet.
They obviously care about them on a week-to-week basis if they're thinking
really,
about bringing...
Really, when's the last time you saw us on SportsCenter?
It's about what drives ratings, not so much what they care about behind the scenes. If they're making plans to possibly come to Youngstown because it's going to be a big matchup that includes NDSU, you know they're paying attention to it. You can't tell me that these guys aren't going behind the scenes talking about this team and paying attention to it. They've been to Fargo. They're going to pay attention to it. Yeah, the moneymaker is going to Alabama LSU, but you still have this kind of soft spot, which is how I feel about darling towards NDSU.
Meh.
Okay.
Meh.
All right.
It's probably not a great podcast answer, but no, I'm still not buying it. No.
So, without Grant Olsen, Youngstown State, a guy to watch for is Kurt Hess, their senior quarterback. How do you think this game is going to go? Give me a prediction.
Man, a prediction's tough. I'm still not going to pick against NDSU, but I don't feel good about it. I mean, I think it's going to be a very, very close game, and I'm going to pick NDSU by a field goal, but I would not be I would be shocked if either team blows the other team out. I think it's going to be a close game, and you know, in close games anything can happen.
Okay.
How's that for a cop out?
Yep.
Thank you.
I like it. Not really, but I'll accept it. Looking at what this team has done this year, Youngstown State, they're kind of similar to NDSU, outside of the fact that they give up more points, but they don't turn the ball over. They cause turnovers. Their time possession so far this year, as I scan the stats, is almost at 30 minutes. They like to hold on to the ball. They run the ball well. Their biggest quarter, though, by far, is the second quarter. They tend to blow teams out in that kind of quarter. Actually, they're a quick-starting team. 127 points so far in the second quarter, which I don't know if that has so much to do with they're a good second-quarter team as far as the opportunities have arisen, but they're a first-half team.
Okay.
To me, if NDSU is able to absorb the loss of Olsen and get through whatever kind of emotional scarring there was from that, kind of regroup, come back, and let's go, I think they'll be okay. I think NDSU wins this. I think it'll be about 10 points.
You're going to say 10?
I'm going to say 10. And I'm going to say it's going to be a typical NDSU type game.
So if we were to make a wager on this and I set the over-under at NDSU -5.5.
Okay, so...
So NDSU, in order for the over to hit, or in order to win, if you took NDSU... You would have to say NDSU wins by 6 or more points. Would you take that wager?
I'd take that wager.
You would take that?
Yeah.
I'm going to take the... I would take the other side. I would take... If it's NDSU -5.5, I would take Youngstown.
All right, let's lock it in.
I like it.
Locked in. We haven't done a wager in a while.
I know.
Okay. Well, good. So, I have NDSU by about 10. You have NDSU by about 3 or maybe less. So, we'll set the way at 5.5, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So... I have NDSU winning this game, moving on, clinching home field advantage, winning the Missouri Valley Football Conference. All is well and right with the world. I think Carlton Littlejohn has a big game, makes people feel a little bit more comfortable with him being the linebacker moving forward.
Okay.
And then
I hope you're right.
We'll go from there. So we're going to step away from NDSU football for a moment and bring in a special guest to the Pinto and White Shadow Show podcast. The head coach of the NDSU women's basketball team, Carolyn Dioff, is on the line. And coach, how you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. Just sitting here catching a little start of the Cowboys New Orleans Saints game here.
Okay, so what do you watch when you're not watching film, when you're away from the team? What's your go-to TV shows?
Oh, my TV shows? Well, first of all, Revenge on Sundays. And let's see, the big Wednesday ones, Modern Family. And then on Thursdays is Grey's and Scandal.
Okay.
So, yeah, quite a few, which is, I don't know, right, wrong, but thank God for DVR. That's
I was going to say, you got your schedule out there, it looks like. So.
Yes.
So, no, that's good. So we were talking earlier to start the show. Dan just got back from Dallas, went to the Cowboys-Vikings game last week. What's the biggest venue that you've ever seen a game in?
Well, I have not been to a professional football game, so I guess I would have to say where I went to school at Arizona State, and in terms of being the biggest venue for, you know, a football. But my freshman year when I was there is when we won the Rose Bowl when John Cooper was there before he went to the Ohio State. So.
Okay. Okay, so did you get to go to the Rose Bowl game?
No, I didn't. No, because that would have been, what, near January?
Oh.
So we were in season at the time, but certainly it was a good time around Arizona State at the time.
I have to ask this because I know you went to Arizona State. It has this perception for those who live in kind of the Dakota areas and maybe around the nation. It's kind of a party school. And without giving out any what you did as an undergrad, it doesn't matter. Does it live up to that reputation?
Well, I don't know if the party schools follow me, because obviously Wyoming is supposedly a party school, and that was my first coaching job. And then Arizona State's where I went to college, so it's certainly a very college town. And then I'm in Fargo, North Dakota, you know, and
yep.
They say that there's not much else to do up here, especially with nights like tonight. But certainly there's a lot to do around Tempe, Arizona, so
okay.
I'll say that.
Yeah, I think I get your drift. I think I kind of understand.
It's a college town. I like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
A, it's a good, college towns, all three of them.
Good safe answer. So, well, Coach, we're catching a little early in the season. You guys have played three games so far this year, two exhibition, one on Friday night against Mayville State. You guys won 112-62. Can you take anything from these first three games, Coach?
Well, the biggest thing that we're taking as a staff and that we're pointing out to the kids is that we're making improvement, and that's really our big target since we started this, which was spring of last year, and certainly with fall preseason and now into games, is we wanted to see steady improvement, and we've seen that, and that's what we want to continue to do.
You know, and certainly improving is a big part with such a young team that you have this year. Obviously very different from last year when you had so many seniors. What's been different about how you're coaching the team early in the season from last year compared to this year?
Well, really gone back to the really basics of fundamentals, really broken things back down. And usually when you have an experienced group, you seem to jump ahead a lot faster. You seem to put a lot more things in. And sometimes you wonder if you should, you know, go backwards a little bit and look at some things. And certainly with the young group that we have, many of them not having played a lot, and obviously those that are new in terms of our freshmen, that was really our goal, is that we were going to start from the very ground level and build up. And we've done that, and our kids have done a nice job of absorbing a lot that we've given them, from the fundamentals of just one-on-one to then implementing it into the bigger setting of things that we're doing right now.
Coach, one of the players that is new to you guys is Brooke Lamar. She transferred in from Southern Illinois, had to sit out last year because of the transfer. I've been very impressed. She had a solid game against Mayville State. How did you guys come about getting her to come to NDSU?
Well, really, it was April of, 2 years ago when we were sitting around doing our spring recruiting of the incoming class at that time. And email had come by that there was an NLI release for us to talk to Brooke Lamar. So we subscribed to a service called Synergy, which is a huge film service for NCAA Division I, Division II, NAIA schools. And so from there, you just can see a number of clips on teams and players. So my assistant popped right on to Synergy and watched over 200 and some clips of Brooke Lamar going, okay, yes, this is a kid that we certainly want to pursue based on the graduation of Katie Burkle, knowing that she would be here a year under our system and that Katie would be graduating. So then she would come right into the role of, you know, Katie's departure from graduation.
What specifically about her game jumped out at you? I mean, as a point guard, was she good at passing? What was it?
Her quickness. You can see it just in terms that she is inline to inline. She's quick. She increases the tempo of your offense. And so that was very appealing to us. And then just her ability to really create off the dribble for her teammates that we could see from film too. So it was very encouraging that somebody like that was available, and let alone somebody from the Missouri Valley that had already put in 2 years also at this level.
You know, that transfer process, I think a lot of fans have at least a working idea of the typical freshman recruitment process. What is that? How is the transfer process different from recruiting an incoming freshman?
Well, they've been through the recruiting process, so they're just, it's pretty much the nuts and bolts. You know, there's no glamour. There's no red carpet there. You know, they don't want to hear all of that stuff. They just want to know, what really do you have available for me academically, and yet even more athletically in terms of the opportunity to play? Because certainly a kid that's put in 2 years at the Division I level that's looking to transfer isn't somebody that's want to come and sit their junior year, per se, Brooks situation. So certainly we had the opportunity to show her on paper that there was going to be a position open for her. She certainly had to earn it, had to fit into what we were doing, but certainly could show her that the opportunity existed greatly here for her.
Coach, you guys scored 112 points in your first game against Mayville State. That's a lot of points to put up on the board. After seeing that and knowing this team for the first couple months, could you make a prediction, or who do you think will be your leading scorer this season?
Well, I think we had six kids in double figures against Mayville, yep. And a couple of those kids came off the bench for us. Mickey Stephenson had a really nice game for us. And certainly, you know, if you want to look at the ones that have the most experience, those would tend to be your Holly Johnson, Marina Whittle, and certainly Liz Kina. So, you know, right now, knowing those three kids with what they were able to do last year and then continue to do for us so far this year, those would be the three kids right now at this point.
You know, I think the big theme, at least early on in the season, is a lot of new faces. With a lot of, again, all the new players, what do you think, and complete the sentence, the one thing above anything else that this team is going to do well this season is?
Play 40 minutes.
Okay.
I know that's two words.
So, and do specifically what in those 40 minutes?
Regardless of the score, have consistency in our play. And not whether we're up by 10 or down by 20, show that we're up by 10 or down by 20. So either a letdown or, you know, that, oh, you know, defeated look, I guess, if that's what you want to say. I just want to see them play on for a full 40 minutes, regardless of what the score shows.
Has there anything that this team has done through preseason practice or, again, these first couple games that has surprised you or that's impressed you?
Really, their ability to catch on so quickly. I mean, from our freshmen on up through even the likes of Kayla Becken and Mickey Stephenson that have been in our program but haven't played a significant amount of minutes. Even the three games that we've played, our scouts have been different. They've been three different opponents that we've had to make adjustments to. And so I'm really pleased with what we're doing right now, especially defensively, because that's really been our focus too. If you had a chance to listen to the press conference for the Summit League conference call, that was the big thing that I wanted to see for us in our biggest area of improvement was what we do defensively.
Coach, I know it's kind of a storyline for some people this year. This is your final year of your contract. Does it feel any different coaching knowing that is hanging over your head?
No, not at all, because the biggest thing that I took from the Center of Coaching Excellence this summer that I had an opportunity, a wonderful opportunity to go to, it's a leadership clinic for coaches, was what they call win the day. And what it is it's what's important now. And so all I'm doing is living each day for what's important at this very moment. And the big thing is to also have patience, because we are a very young group, and that, you know, the last thing I can do is put a lot of pressure on them to be any better than what they can be right now, because they are young. And the only way they gain experience is to practice each day and each game that's ahead of them. And then we just continue to get better like we have, then good things will happen for this group.
Any interesting conversations that you got to have at the coaches clinic that you had this summer?
No, it was really learning a lot about yourself. We all took a personality test, and it was, you know, so you learned a lot about your communication style and how you deal with conflict management and all of those things that, you know, come at you as a head coach. I oftentimes relate head coaching to parenting, as there's not a book on how to tell you to be a parent, and there's not a book on, you know, how you be a head coach. You go through a lot of experiences, and through those experiences, you learn a lot of lessons, and you know, if you're willing to change, which I think I've done a great job of here, then, you know, you make adjustments to stuff. And I certainly feel that this group will reap the benefits of a lot of things that have gone on the last 5 years for us.
Dan and I had taken a personality test at one point, and the answer came back no. So we've kind of avoided taking any more of those. But what's going to make this a successful season?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that you see continual improvement from what you saw the first game against Crookston to the very last game of our season, at whatever point that is. That this group is competitive and did everything on any given night to play their best basketball at that very moment. And if we do that, then obviously you have a great opportunity for the outcome to favor you. Some nights it might not, because obviously, you know, maybe the team just happened to have the ball bounce their way. But can you look yourself in the mirror and say to yourself, did you give everything that you could at that very moment? And if you did, then you can smile and you can walk away and you can say, we'll come back at it again the next day and we'll be successful. So that's really the measuring stick for myself, for our coaches, and certainly what we're stressing to our team.
Coach, I'm looking at your non-conference schedule right now. You guys only play three more home games before you start out with Fort Wayne in January. Do you like being on the road so much with this team, as young as it is?
Well, it can be an advantage and disadvantage. I'm certainly looking at it as an advantage, because it's a young group, as you say, and certainly we know that we can really find out a lot about ourselves. It's a great time for some team bonding pieces. We can spend a lot of time together, learn a lot more about one another. The road, you know, develops toughness, not from a physical and strength piece, but again, that consistency that we talk about from night in and night out. If you can play consistent on the road when you don't have your fans behind you, then again, you're going to find some success. So I'm okay with it. Certainly a little plan too, with obviously the craze with football and how long, you know, the run for football goes here at North Dakota State. So it's not a bad time for us to be on the road right now.
Well, Coach, your next two games, Maine and Harvard, we wish you the best of luck in those two games on the road. And I want to thank you for joining us here on the podcast.
Thanks, guys. This was great. I appreciate you having me.
As head coach Carolyn Dehoff of the NDSU women's basketball team, let's continue with the basketball talk, and we'll move on to the NDSU men's basketball team. Not much to discuss with their win over, what is it, Viterbo?
There you go.
Viterbo.
Whoa, is that a pronunciation that you just got right?
Yes, I did.
My gosh, what happened to you in Texas?
I studied name a lot before we got on. Okay. So that don't think that I'm all of a sudden better at pronouncing college names.
Okay, all right.
Mechanese
State. I was hoping.
So don't learn much. They're an NAIA school. It's supposed to be, essentially what it was supposed to be was an exhibition game, but then there was a scheduling screw-up, so then it became a regular season game. If I was to have one question from this game, moving forward for this NDSU team, who is the most important role player on this team, Brad? Mike Felt, Corey Brown, or Chris Kading?
Yeah, I'm always going to be partial to the Gunners, because that's what I did when I played.
And you're a lefty.
And I am a lefty, which Mike Felt is not, but man, can that guy shoot.
Yes.
So I'm going to take Mike Felt, but there's a heavy, heavy dose of personal bias in there with it.
Okay.
I like having that guy when things aren't going as well as they could be, that you can call off the bench and say, hey, get in there and turn this momentum around a little bit. And of those three guys, Felt's the guy that can do that.
The three is kind of like the home run.
Yep.
And I understand that. But to me, I need two shutdown defenders. Taylor Braun is one. Corey Brown's my other. Starter, guy sets the tone with his energy. To me, he's the most important role player, because defensively, that's where this team is going to find their mark. And he's going to be the guy that's going to be out there running around with an endless amount of energy, being able to cover the second or he's probably going to be guarding the best perimeter player, if not the second best perimeter player. And Mike Felt, I get that he's a big deal. He's an important role player, but he's also streaky as heck. I mean, very streaky.
That's true.
So you don't know what kind of Felt you're getting. You get more consistency with Corey Brown.
That's true. The problem that I have with Corey Brown is that last year, and maybe this will be different this year, but when he was on the floor last year, the Bison were playing 4-on-5 on the offensive end.
Yes.
Because you didn't have to be anywhere near him, and you could tell that he, in my opinion, what I saw was that when he got the ball, he had been told by the coaches, pass the ball as soon as you get it, do not take a jump shot.
Yeah.
Do not do it, do not do it, do not do it. And one more time, do not do it. And that makes playing offense really, really difficult when you have one guy that you don't even have to bother paying attention to. It makes things more difficult. That's why I would lean a little bit more towards Felt, because you at least have to know where he's at, and he can be a difference maker on when he comes into the game. Corey Brown is a pest. He's going to bother the team's best perimeter player. He's going to save some energy for Taylor Braun, which is incredibly important.
Right.
I still think that spark off the bench is maybe even a little bit more important than that.
Mike Felt had 23 points in 26 minutes. I saw the highlights on GoBison.com. He one three came from the lap of Saul Phillips. He was shooting from everywhere.
He's got a little bit. There's a little bit of what we had talked about 2 weeks ago with my Zach Vrah conversation, where Zach Vrah tends to put up big numbers against lesser opponents.
Right.
Felt definitely has a little bit of that in him.
So Mike Felt for you, Corey Brown for me. We'll see how this goes on. Be a fun season for this NDSU men's team. I have to check out their schedule, because I know for what they have coming up, it's going to be fun. St. Mary's on the road coming up is their next game this Thursday. And then Southern Miss is a high-ranked mid-major school coming to Fargo on the road against Western Michigan, up to North Dakota, Grand Forks actually, to play UND. So it'll be a lot of fun to check out this team and see how they do this year. But again, role players, to me, it's all about the defense. That's what's going to make this team go this season. Let's move on to
regional.
Vikings stink.
Okay.
So we've assessed that for the heck of it, because I've been hearing a lot of the name Johnny Manziel being thrown around. If you had one quarterback to pick from the stable quarterbacks in college right now, Brad, who would be the guy you'd want to see in purple next year?
Ooh. Man, you're throwing that question at me cold, giving me any prep. Probably Mariota.
Really? Why?
Yeah, I still think that he's the most likely of that group to be a good pro.
Okay.
I mean, I think he's the most pro-ready quarterback of the bunch. To me, it's between Mariota or Bridgewater. And I think I'm going to stick with Mariota, but I don't feel great about it.
Okay. I'm going to throw you a curveball, even more so than I just did.
Okay.
I like A.J. McCarron.
Interesting. Okay.
Wins games, plays in a pro-style offense, plays in an offense that likes to run the ball, which the Vikings would do. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes. Johnny Manziel is going to be a reach in the first round for anybody who tries to take him. Would you agree?
Yeah. Here's the deal. As a Vikings fan, you know what? I'm tired of the, you know what? We need a guy in here who's not going to make mistakes. And, you know, we just need a guy who's going to take care of the ball and hand it off to Adrian Peterson, and we're going to be just fine.
Right.
Yeah, really, where's that gotten us? you know, when we played the best? When we had Brett Favre in there. You know what Brett Favre likes to do? You know what? Take a few chances and make some mistakes.
Right.
Granted, one of them killed the season.
Yes.
But you got us the NFC Championship game.
Yeah.
Give me a quarterback that's going to take some chances, that's going to be exciting, and that's going to be able to make some plays. Maybe A.J. McCarron can do that, and he just doesn't have to at Alabama. That's possible. But give me somebody that's going to make a play, not a guy who's not going to make a mistake.
And, yeah, I get your take on somebody who's going to take chances, but...
Who's got the talent to make some of those chances.
And you don't think McCarron does?
I don't know, because you don't ever see him. You at least see the other guys take a few chances. You just don't see him do it because he doesn't have to. I think McCarron is probably going to be around the NFL for a while.
Okay.
I could very easily see him having the longest career out of any of those because, again, he's a solid guy, and guys who are solid, you love those guys as your backup.
Yeah.
You're okay with them as your starter if you have greatness all around them. But
right.
you enjoy having that kind of guy as your backup quarterback. So I could see him sticking around the longest, but I don't know that I would want him as the one guy to come in and all of a sudden give the Vikings a quarterback who's actually going to lead them somewhere.
Okay, I see your point because you only have so much time left with Adrian Peterson. That's what everybody talks about. And the quarterback situation, everybody in Minnesota wants a new quarterback. I think that's evident. I think even maybe the GM probably wants to see what they can do with a new quarterback. I don't think the Josh Freeman thing is going to work out. I think that Christian Ponder showed us what he should be able to do on a consistent basis on Thursday night. But again,
now, if only he could be a designated driver for his receivers.
Yeah, Trum Simpson. He got so excited. He got so excited about the win. It had been so long since they had won. He just went out and partied a little too much.
Apparently, because it was like, what, 72 hours later that he... It was like Saturday, 48 hours later.
Hey,
that must have been a long...
We don't have to play on Sunday, so who cares? You know, that's probably his thinking. But, again, the Johnny Manziel thing, forever and a day, I will say, not a pro quarterback. I looked up the size, about the same size as Brett Favre, okay? But the throws he makes, I know, right? You wouldn't think so, but yeah, 6'2". They're both 6'2".
Okay.
I think Favre might have been a little bit heavier, but again, same size. But I just don't see him as that kind of pro quarterback.
He's at his best when he is running around all over the place improvising. Well, guess what? A lot of these DNs that are chasing you are going to be just as fast as you. And that's not the case for you in college. That will be the case in the pros. And all of a sudden, when you turned around and had daylight, now you're going to have 270 pounds in
your
grill.
The other part of his game that's rarely successful is he's able to run. He's not going to be able to run against the kind of linebackers and defensive secondary space in the NFL.
He'll still be able to run, but he won't be able to do the goofy stuff that he does all around the pocket. And he almost looks uncomfortable when he's actually in the pocket.
Right.
And those quarterbacks do not succeed in the
exactly.
NFL.
Exactly. You think of a pocket passer, even a guy like Tony Romo who moves so much, he's most comfortable when he's got time to throw.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fact. It was the same with Brett Favre. Yeah, he improvised, but he was most comfortable as a pocket passer.
Yeah, as I was saying, not even when they have time to throw, because every quarterback's more comfortable when they have time to throw.
Right.
But when I can get my feet set in the pocket and step into a throw, that's when I'm most comfortable. It feels like he's more comfortable. You know what? I'd rather just kind of start running around and do some playground stuff and just chuck it.
Yeah. There's so many plays that he just throws it up and hopes.
Yeah.
And it works. He's not a good pro quarterback. Vikings, stop it.
I agree.
Not a good pro quarterback. NFC North. Maybe this could be another ongoing wager. Let's see. You have three teams that are still in the playoff hunt. Detroit, Green Bay, and Chicago. Pick one to finish the season at the top and explain why.
Man, if you could tell me exactly how many weeks Aaron Rodgers was going to be out, that would make this a lot easier. Because
that's what makes it beautiful.
That really derailed my pick of Green Bay winning the division. I mean, that just hurts that pick so, so badly. I still might get the over on their wins. But, man.
Yeah. I think, actually, you have one that, what are they, 2-7?
I've got the Vikings one wrapped up, but we had one on Green Bay too.
Oh yeah, that's right, we did.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was wins. I think it was them winning the division.
Was it?
I think maybe it was 9.5. I can't remember.
I think it was wins. We'll have to go back.
We'll
and
have to check it. I check it weekly.
Does it mean that hell's frozen over if I say Detroit?
No, I just think it's who has the most healthy quarterback at the end of the season. Who's left standing, really?
I guess I have to say Detroit.
Yeah, I do too. Seeing what I saw today from Green Bay, they can't survive on a running game alone. That's not their style. They need to use their wideouts to their advantage. They have good wideouts. You don't have a quarterback that can get it to them. And whoever that guy was that came in, the accountant from Wisconsin that they brought in,
sure,
they're not going to win many games with him as quarterback. Not with the way that... you come to expect a certain style of play, especially as a defense. I mean, it affects the whole team when Aaron Rodgers goes out, because a defense can go, we can give up like 20 points, we'll be all right. You know, the defense obviously has more pride, but they understand there's some give there. Now you have a defense that's pressing a little bit more. They feel that they need to shut out every team. That's never a good thing. And your quarterback, they don't want to throw with them. They're going to have to run it, not a running team, so I have to agree with you, Detroit.
Okay, can I go on a mini rant here?
Go.
After Aaron Rodgers gets hurt, all the talking heads, all the national shows, this is why you have to have a backup quarterback, and this is why you need to spend some money and make sure that you've got a good backup in there. And I think that's one of the stupidest things that I've ever heard.
Go
get him. Because if you're going to be a successful team, you don't want to have $2-3 million wrapped up in your backup quarterback. Okay? Because if things are going to go well for you, your quarterback is not going to get hurt. If you have a quarterback, one of those top tier guys, and he goes down, you're screwed. I'm sorry, but there's not a way to recover from that in the NFL with the way that your team is built if you have one of those guys. There is not a backup guy that you can bring in and know that he is, you know, we're going to sign, you know, pick whoever your guy is, somebody who's going to be a pretty good backup quarterback, and we're going to spend money on that, and that way if Drew Brees gets hurt, everything's going to be okay. No, it's not. If your quarterback goes down, you're just in trouble. Sorry, you're out of luck. You're going to have to wait till next year. And that's just the way it is. Spending money on a backup quarterback is one of the most worthless things that you can do.
Oh, my! He's on fire!
I feel better.
Do you feel vindicated?
I've been holding. I don't know if vindicated is the right word. I just feel better. I've been holding that in, and that needed to come out. So.
Yeah, that was it's a little... It's heated in here right now.
Yeah, sorry.
No, it's okay.
I gotta let the steam out of my headphones.
We're not used to the White Shadow being so vehemently opposed to a certain topic. I mean, especially if it doesn't come from me.
Yeah.
I agree with you 100%. I mean, there's no other way to look at it. Starting quarterback goes down, see you later. I mean, there's no right way around it. That was well put. So we'll move on from there. I think we both agree Detroit out of the NFC North at this point in the season. We figure they're going to finish the season on the top. I mean, unless Aaron Rodgers by miracle has his collarbone fused together overnight, there's nobody else in that division now, especially with Cutler, more injury issues, and he was taken out towards the end of the game today against Detroit. I've got Detroit. So, Brad, let's get to a topic near and dear to your heart, NBA basketball.
Yeah.
Are you surprised by the fast start of the Minnesota Timberwolves?
Not really. I mean, they're going to be a fun team. They're going to win games in the regular season. They just are. Not enough to get them a good matchup. But, but I mean, early on, you know, this team is going to be a streaky team, I think, this year.
4-2 so far.
I mean, they're going to go in stretches where they're going to reel off 4, 5, 6, 7 wins, and then they're going to have stretches where they're going to lose that many because there's going to be nights that the shooting is going to go cold with them.
Okay,
I think they're not going to be as steady of a team as what you might see with Indiana, Miami, Chicago, San Antonio. I think they're going to be a little bit more streaky, but that's not going to surprise me when they start off the season well.
They've got some really kind of measuring stick matchups coming tonight and tomorrow night, both the Lakers and the Clippers on the road. We'll kind of see how good the Timberwolves are. I'm somewhat surprised. I guess I can't really say I am. We knew this team was going to be good. We knew that they were going to be a pretty stellar offensive team. Yeah, they're right where I expected them to be. If they're kind of at this pace in the middle of the season,
yeah.
We'll be surprised. But no, otherwise, I think we're all kind of agreeance on that one.
More surprised, and I guess this really isn't regional anymore, but more surprised by the fact that
National.
Thank you. That Phoenix and Philadelphia, the two teams in the pole position for Tankapalooza 2013-14, are both leading their divisions right now.
After 7 games.
That's surprising.
7 games, so relax.
I know, but people were saying the over-under in Vegas for wins for the Philadelphia team, I believe, was 16.5.
Wow. That's... What are they at right now?
It's either four and three. Yeah, I mean, people didn't think they'd get their fourth win until Christmas.
Okay,
and
do you think tanking is a real thing, or is it just something made up by the media?
I think it is a legitimate strategy that should be used, but it's not one that can really be used at the early stages of the season because in order for tanking to be successful, you can't make it obvious.
Yeah.
You just can't. And Phoenix tried hard by trading their starting center 2 days before the season started.
Yep.
In Marcin Gortat. But I think it happens when a guy rolls his ankle walking down the sidewalk and misses 3 weeks. I mean, I think that's when tanking comes in. Just not so much earlier in the season. But, yeah, I think it's a real strategy that should be used.
What are you more surprised about? Indiana undefeated or Utah no wins?
Not Indiana being undefeated because, I mean, they're a group that has stayed together, played really well, and plays solid defense. Doesn't surprise me that they've started out 7-0. Utah, gosh. I mean, 0-7, you don't really, I guess, expect that from the Jazz, but this isn't the Jazz as we remember them.
Right.
Even they're so young, and they just probably are not going to be good. I mean, we'll see what happens with Enes Kanter and Derek Favors and Gordon Hayward and those guys, but they just might not be good.
Yeah, that's true. All right, let's get to our final national question of this podcast. NFL, three coaches on the hot seat. It's our favorite. One of my favorite. It's become one of
the
favorites.
You do enjoy this, but you're a mean-spirited person.
I am a mean-spirited person at the heart. Yeah. Okay, three coaches on the hot seat. Who's your number one?
I mean, isn't Greg Schiano, he's basically the Kentucky of this Alabama, maybe, of this poll at this point.
Have not been deceived.
Joe Philbin, hey, welcome to the welcome to the countdown here. He has to be number two.
Yeah, I agree.
He absolutely has to be after the insane last week, 10 days that there's been in Miami. He's got to be up there.
How do you feel about the whole bullying thing that's gone on in Miami? Quick little sidebar.
Yeah, it's interesting because I saw a tweet that I thought was really interesting is that it's the popular term, it's the in term to throw out right now is bullying in a lot of different situations. There's a difference between being a bully and being an a-hole. And I believe it was Michelle Beadle. I believe she was the one that tweeted that out. And I'm not sure where exactly this falls.
I could tell you it's a-hole.
I mean,
that's what Richie Incognito is.
Yeah. And now there's, you know, which always happens with this. Now there's, you know, a 2012 investigation where he harassed a woman at a golf course.
Right.
That has all of a sudden come out. You know, not exactly the guy you want as your next door neighbor. But the bullying term, people talk about the culture of the locker room, and it's just so different than what it is. And whether that's right or wrong, whether that's the way it should be, there's a very, very real discussion to be had there. But, I mean, if a person who worked just your average day job went and spent a day and heard the things that were said in a locker room. I know the things that were said in a high school locker
room growing
up. And I can't imagine the type of things that are said in a pro locker room.
Yeah.
And it's just business as usual. And that the straw that broke the camel's back was a group of players getting up when this guy sat down and walking away at lunch, and that being the thing is just really interesting. Now, obviously, a lot of straws on that back.
Yeah, ton of them.
And I feel like my comments here are going to be going as in, you know, something anti-Jonathan Martin, which isn't the case. He is the victim here, and he's obviously the one who has been wronged. But I think it's being portrayed as this only happened in this locker room. And I just don't see that as the case.
You don't believe that? That I think that these type of instances do happen where rookies are asked to do certain things. But to this extent, you think that it happens to this extent in other locker rooms?
Yeah, I do.
Really?
I do. I think maybe sans the racial slurs. I think and leaving that in voicemails, I think that probably does not happen in every locker room, and maybe I'm even naive there.
Right.
But do I think that coaches say, there's players on almost every team that coaches say, hey, this guy needs to be toughened up a little bit?
Well, yeah, I think that happens, but I mean, to the extremities that Richie Incognito took it is what I'm saying.
I think over the next few months, I think it's going to be real interesting to see because I think there's going to be a snowball of stories like this where Jonathan Martin is not the only guy that things like this happen to.
Well,
that's, and I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong.
I agree with you, though.
But I think I think there's going to be, and people are going to realize that, man, this is way, way more common than what we thought it was.
Right. But again, you've been in a locker room even at a high school level, and you understand that the freshmen get picked on, or the quiet guy gets picked on a little bit, or there's some jokes that are thrown around. Because it's a bunch of teenagers that are without supervision playing sports. It's kind of like, yeah, let's rip each other because he has a cute sister kind of thing.
Sure. And now, in the pros, you're getting to people where, yes, are they grown men? Yes, but... This is the environment that they know.
Yep.
That's the only environment that they've ever had to be in.
Yep. And accepted in too.
Yes.
You know, because Richie Incognito in real life would have no friends. But because his attitude was, I'm the boss here and I'm gonna take things do it my way, he was accepted because that was a go get him attitude, a leadership style attitude, evidently, to Joe Philbin. And that's why he's number two on the list.
There you go.
Who's number three?
Who's your number three?
My number three right now is Mike Smith.
Okay. Yeah, today didn't help.
And I would say maybe he's 3A, 3B being Gary Kubiak. I understand he had an incident.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make up for the fact that he had lost five straight up to that point.
Can you get fired for having to make Wade Phillips the head coach of your team?
No.
You can't get fired for that.
No, that would not be the reason.
That seems like that would be a fireable offense. Something happened where you had to make us put Wade Phillips in charge of this team.
I think we need
to let you go.
I think that they'll not approach that subject at
all. Okay.
I think they'll just go with the fact that, yeah, five losses in a row.
I think I would have Gary Kubiak ahead of
Smith.
Yeah, just because looking at the last 2 years, it's been a complete disappointment for Kubiak. Just this year has been a disappointment for Smith. I think I wouldn't surprise me, but I'm going to put Kubiak a little bit ahead.
Okay. But yeah, Smith, I mean, this year for Atlanta, in a division that all of a sudden has become a little more deep than you'd expect. Carolina, by the way, today.
Yeah, Ron Rivera, who is a staple of this list.
And then just said, you know what, see you, boys.
Yeah.
Didn't want to be a part of it.
Peace.
Beat San Francisco 10-9 today. They're well within the running in the AFC West South. NFC South.
Yep.
Can't even get the division or region right. Mike Smith has been this team has been a huge disappointment. And I get there's been injuries, but even so, they're losing games that they should win. They're losing bad too. I think they got destroyed by the Rams one game, who destroyed the Colts today
for some reason.
Tavion Austin was a beast.
Tavion?
I knew I couldn't go a whole
Tavon,
whatever. Couldn't go a whole podcast without screwing up a name. So, but
at least the podcast is complete now.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Right at the end, I'll probably edit that out. So, well, that is the end of the 018 podcast. Thank you to our guest, NDSU Women's Head Coach Carolyn Dioff, for joining us. Again, if you want to follow me, I'm at PintoKFGO on Twitter. Brad, the White Shadow Jones, is
at the Bison Guy.
Remember to email us or give us a comment on our podcast page on KFGO.com and 740thefan.com. I will give you guys a hint that we might have something NBA related that could be put into the ongoing wager coming up in our next few podcasts. We're still trying to figure things out. That season's really young. We didn't get to any kind of national collegiate basketball, and we didn't actually have a chance. Maybe we could slip it in here late. We didn't talk. Were you surprised about Oregon losing on Thursday? It was a Thursday game.
No.
Okay, here's a better question. Off the cusp, I didn't even plan for this, but I'll say it anyways. If these three teams are undefeated at the end of the season, Alabama, Baylor, Ohio State, who are you putting in the national championship?
Florida State?
Yeah, because I think Alabama will lose. It has the most likely chance of losing.
Okay.
Of the four undefeated teams the rest of the way.
Okay, you didn't say Florida State, though. I said
Alabama.
Yeah.
Change it. Florida State, Ohio State, or Baylor. Those three teams to go to the national championship, who are they?
Florida State.
That's one. Who's the other one?
Alabama.
No, you have three teams to pick. Baylor, Ohio State, Florida State. Alabama's not a choice.
Alabama's not.
I'm saying because Alabama's going to lose late in the season.
No, they're not. Alabama's playing Florida State.
Well, you totally destroyed my question.
That's because your question was stupid. I mean, to me, it's going to end up being Alabama, Florida State. I think Baylor's going to lose at some point, and Ohio State, bless the Big Ten's little heart. It's just not getting enough respect. I think the Florida State runs the table.
Poor.
Pretty much.
That is the Big Ten.
Pretty much.
All right. Well, you totally destroyed that question.
I made it better. I gave the correct answer.
Oh, gosh. Whatever. Well, this is the end of the 018 podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Again, email us pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Dale Gunderson, Brad Jones, Twitter. Leave the comments, and we'll get to them. Again, for Brad Jones, I'm Daniel Gunderson. Thank you so much for listening to this weekend's podcast.